the bellies in the back, sweet singers in the front, cruising down the freeway in the hot, hot sun. Suddenly red blue lights flash us from behind, loud voice booming, please step out onto the line.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of the College Countdown here at the National Football Post. I am your host, Joe Fortenball. We're getting ready to bring you some of the biggest matchups in college football today. Let me bring in my boy, NFP Director of College Scouting and co-host of this fine program, Wes Bunning. Wes, what's happening?
Oh, not too much, Joe. Just getting ready these afternoon games. We couldn't pass them up today. We couldn't wait till the nightcap, so we got to get into these afternoon games today.
We had to tweak our schedule a little bit. We had to bump the program up, which for a Saturday morning, for both of us, not the easiest thing in the world. However, we're here to rally. That's what we do. We want to bring you this podcast. We want to bring you the best insight that we can leading into today's action. And when I mean the best insight, obviously, I'm talking about Bunting, not myself. I'm just here running off the mouth, trying to fill up a few minutes of time. So, Wes, let's get into it. Two big games we're previewing today, both 3:30 games, one of which near and dear to my heart, but I'm going to remain unbiased and let you do most of the talking for this. A Big Ten matchup for the ages, number 16th ranked Ohio State, that's the BCS rankings, heading to Happy Valley, my alma mater, number 11 Penn State. This is a big one, Wes. Iowa is in the lead for the Big Ten right now. They control their own destiny for the Rose Bowl and possibly the national championship, but this game is for basically runner-up, and in case Iowa slips up, let me start with the quarterback battle. For Ohio State, second-year running back Terrell Pryor returns to Pennsylvania. I used to watch him play in high school here. He went to Jeanette. He was an outstanding talent, but he spurned Penn State to go play at Ohio State, so the crowd should be a little hostile for him. And on the other side of the football, Darryl Clark, the veteran for Penn State, another good quarterback. He's had his ups, he's had his downs. Who do you give the edge to in the quarterback battle?
Well, you said an interesting word when describing those two and talking about the veteran and Darryl Clark. These guys are actually pretty similar, both physically gifted athletes. They can make plays down the field with both their arm and their feet. However, when you look at Clark, you have to give him the edge in accuracy, a bit more decisive, a bit more seasoned. When you look at Pryor, he's a bit better of an overall athlete, creates a little more with his legs, and can make people miss. However, the key in this one that I give the advantage to is Darryl Clark, with his ability to not only take care of the football a bit better than Pryor does, but he can create some plays down the field with his arm. Pryor more of a run threat first, and he has a tendency to force the ball down the field. Too turnover prone. That's why I like Darryl Clark as the leader of the Penn State Nittany Lions in this one.
Now, Clark, obviously, as you just mentioned, Pryor has had trouble with his accuracy against some of the bigger defenses. He struggled to move the ball down the field through the air. From what you've seen from him based in his freshman year last year when he stepped in and played right away to this year, have you seen progress or is he still making a lot of the same mistakes?
Well, the thing is, his foot, he's really raw as a quarterback prospect. His footwork's really sloppy, has a tendency to drop his elbow down. And when he comes in, you can tell he's been coached up a lot this offseason, because when they show him in pregame warm-ups, he keeps his arm nice and high, nice and quick with his footwork. But as soon as that game starts, really sloppy, and he has a tendency, it almost looks like he's playing playground football. So that's my biggest concern with Pryor. I don't think he's put it all together yet. And honestly, I think he's going to continue to struggle this year, maybe into next year. And I think eventually at the next level in the NFL, he's more of a H-back, wide receiver, tight end type of prospect.
Ooh, so only in his second year, we're already getting NFL projections out of you. Wes, easy does it, I may say. It's Saturday morning. Let's just stick to the games. You're going above my head. You're going off the script. I'm going to get lost.
This is what happens when you get me up early. I got to drink some coffee. I've been doing my jumping jacks. I'm ready to go, Joe.
Jumping jacks. All right. Well, listen, one of the other key matchups to look for in this game, and this is something I've watched all year with Penn State, is their offensive line. They had a lot of trouble adequately protecting Clark in the game against Iowa, and that was one of the big reasons Iowa was so effective in winning that football game, was that Clark was constantly seeing pressure in his face. He was constantly being hit, taken to the ground. He was thrown out of rhythm. OSU, some might say, has an even better press rush than the Hawkeyes. what's the Penn State offensive line going to do? Are they going to be able to handle this OSU front four?
Well, what you have to worry about is on the outside, tackles Poti and Landholt. Can they handle the combination? Ohio State has two unique defensive ends. One 6'6", 290 in Cameron Hayward. The other 6'2", around 240, speed rusher in Thaddeus Gibson. Both of those guys, their ability to complement each other off the edge with the bull rush and the speed rush really give opposing tackles a lot of problems. Plus, what Ohio State's been able to do very efficiently in recent games is on third down, when they get teams in third and long situations, they kick Hayward inside and they bring a guy, Ross Holman, off the edge, the linebacker. Gibson can rush off the edge, and they create a lot of pressure with Hayward inside, the two guys rushing off the edge. I think they could give Penn State a lot of trouble if they get them in third and long situations, force Clark to sit back in the pocket and make decisions. Penn State needs to run the ball efficiently to give themselves a chance early.
Let me ask you a question about running back Evan Royster. He's not a big name in the country, but he's been a workhorse for the Nittany Lions for the past two seasons. Do you see him finding some success tomorrow, or today, I should say? I'm already starting to think about the NFL. But in addition to that, how do you see him projecting at the next level?
Well, I like Evan Royster. He's a big, physical guy. What you see is what you get with him. He's not a guy that's going to consistently break off 70, 80-yard runs, not lightning in a bottle. But he's instinctive in short areas, can make a guy miss. He's powerful, and he gets up to speed quickly. So he reaches top-end speed quickly. Once he breaks that tackle, can burst towards daylight, and he's instinctive between the tackles, which is key for him. I think he's going to have some success in this one. You look at the interior of the Ohio State defensive line. They have a big 6'6", 270-pound defensive tackle in Doug Worthington. Tall, long-arm guy, but lacks girth inside, only around 270, 280. So I think with Stefan Wisniewski inside the center, I think he'll be able to get off the ball, create some movement inside, give Evan Royster some run lanes, and Penn State needs to run the ball efficiently. I think if they can do that, keep the Ohio State pass rushers from consistently coming off the edge on third down, I think they're going to have a lot of success in this one.
Great scouting word, the term girth. We always love to hear it here at the College Countdown West. Thank you for dropping that so early in the podcast. Let's go to your prediction for this one. I believe they're calling for a whiteout today at Happy Valley. It's obviously a hostile environment up there, over 100,000 strong at the game. Ohio State comes to town. This is generally viewed as the biggest game of the year for the Penn State Nittany Lions. How do you see it playing out? And before you answer, let me remind everyone, Bunning did call the Oregon upset over USC last week, and he also said Texas, which you don't get much credit for that. That was pretty obvious. But I will give you Oregon. So a nice weekend last week, 2-0. A little more pressure this week. Who do you like in Penn State, Ohio State?
Joe, I've been hot as of late, so give me a little credit. But
2-0 is not hot, all right? 2-0 is just 2-0. It's not hot.
But we look back. I did say Mississippi State close versus Florida. I mean, come on. I get a little credit for some of these, but I like a defensive struggle early, Joe. Field goals all in the first half, all around. I think we're going to see a defensive-led game. Penn State, though, eventually with Evan Royster pounding the interior, the defensive line of Ohio State starts to wear them down in the second half. The coaching staff of Ohio State has to commit more linebackers to the run game. I think we'll see some play action, get the ball down the field to Moy, to Powell, to Zug, to Corliss. A couple big plays for Penn State in the second half, and I think that's what opens it up. I still like it'll be a close defensive game all the way, but Penn State makes a couple more plays in the second half to win this one.
Ooh, I like that, Wes. I like that a lot. So you've got the Nittany Lions winning tomorrow. Obviously, that would help their BCS ranking, since essentially they haven't played anyone all year except Iowa, and they lost that game. So they could use a credible win. Let's move to the second game we're going to discuss today. And by far and away, this one's going to be watched by a heck of a lot more in the country, I would have to imagine. That's right. We're going to the SEC, and we're going to one of the biggest showdowns of the season. The number 9 ranked LSU Tigers head to Alabama to take on the number 3 ranked Crimson Tide. If there is ever a matchup that screamed defense, this is it. Both defensive units have been outstanding this year in slowing down their opponents. They play smart, controlled football. Let's start with Alabama, Wes. Last time we saw them, and they're coming off the bye, but last time we saw them, they were playing a Tennessee Volunteers team that had, by all accounts, had that game won. They could have won that football game and shocked the world and gotten Lane Kiffin that signature win. They didn't. A lot of people say it's a mark of great teams when they can pull out games late. That's what Saban's crew did. Was the Bama performance, however, in that Tennessee game a sign of things to come?
Joe, you made a great point. They're coming off the bye this week, and there's not too many teams in college football this year that had the bye week as late as Alabama. This was their first week off this past week, and you could tell against Tennessee, especially in that second half. They were sluggish. They were tired. They struggled to make plays in space in the secondary. So I think this bye week is going to really recharge their batteries, energize them on all levels of the field, and I thought that was just a mirage just because these guys were tired and worn down. I think we're going to see a different, aggressive, more ferocious Alabama team on defense and offense come tonight, or this afternoon. Sorry, team.
That's all right. I'm doing it too. You were thinking we usually do these podcasts. It's usually night games. Don't worry about it. However, moving to the other side of the football, as great as the Alabama defense has been, the offense has struggled this season to score points. What is it that they're going to need to do to start putting some points on the board to contend with this LSU team?
Well, we know what they want to do. They're conservative on offense. They're going to pound Mark Ingram, run the football consistently. However, we've seen, both these defenses, they're looking at a mirror at each other. They're both very similar. LSU is going to force Alabama to get into third and long situations, throw the football down the field. They're going to put eight guys up in the box and dare them to throw the ball. When you look at Alabama and their skill positions, they got a guy, sophomore Julio Jones, 6'4". The guy's rocked up. Looks like he's 230 pounds right now. Last year as a freshman, 924 yards in the pass game. This year, he's on pace for 344. Joe, this guy's an elite talent in college football. He looks like he could come into the NFL tomorrow and separate versus NFL corners. They need to find a way to get him the ball, whether it's trick plays, whether it's thrown out of the wildcat, reverses, double reverses, whatever it is, they have got to get the ball down the field to Julio Jones.
Julio Jones, a name everyone should be familiar with in college football, because come draft day, when he eventually does come out, he's going to be one of the most popular names you hear about in the couple months leading up to that day. Now, let's go over to the LSU side of the ball. Offensively, this is a team just like very similar to Alabama. They play lights out defense, but the offense is by no means explosive. And, you know, when we talk about this, we're expecting a matchup in which, you know, Alabama, LSU, they play some solid defense, and, you know, Alabama not giving up a lot of points. I'm rambling here, but can they expect LSU, that is, to move the ball against this defense? And if so, how are they going to do it?
Joe, well, exactly what I just said against the LSU defense for Alabama is what Alabama is going to do for LSU. They're going to crowd the line of scrimmage. They're going to try to force quarterback Jordan Jefferson to throw into the teeth of the Alabama defense. Scott Williams, they're going to run the ball on first and second down for LSU. However, with Mount Cody inside, Brandon Dietrich at defensive end, they're tough to run on and consistently pick up yards in the run game. They have two talented wide receivers, Brandon LaFell, Terrence Tolliver, and if they watch the tape of Tennessee wideouts and even running backs when they split out Montario Hardesty had a lot of success running these quick slants across the middle, plucking the ball with their hands, and attacking right down the middle. I think you can see the big wide receivers do that occasionally, but the Alabama defense, if they can force LSU into third and long situations, make Jordan Jefferson throw into the teeth of that defense, it's going to be a long day with the blitz packages that Saban can come up with, and plus the range that they have in the secondary. A lot of turnovers could be in store if Jefferson doesn't take good care of the football.
What's going to be the difference in this game and who you got winning it?
Joe, like I just said, Jefferson at quarterback really scares me. When he's forced to make plays, the offense really struggles. They become very turnover prone. I think Alabama's more conservative on offense. They'll make some plays on defense, give the offense some short fields. And I just think because of the lack of being able to take care of the football in the LSU offense, I think that's the difference. I like Bama in a close one. And once again, Joe, take the under. That's my advice. Take the under.
That's the one thing we always do with Alabama around here, is we always take the under. However, this is going to be one of those games that when people look at it, they're all going to be clamoring. They look at LSU, they look at Bama, they're going to think under. I wouldn't be surprised if it was a shocker 42-40. What do you say about that?
Yeah, go ahead, bet that, Joe. I hope that works out for you.
There is no chance that that happens, however. I might as well throw it out there, and that way, if it comes true, I can reference it and tell everyone that's what I said. So, all right, Bunning, you've got Penn State and you've got Alabama. You're trying to continue to build on this streak, which you did a really nice job with last week. So we'll see. We will revisit this next week. But before we end the program today, we want to go to our Heisman watch, and we want to update everyone on some of the top prospects and what happened last week. So let's start with your boy, the one you wrote about this week, defensive tackle from Nebraska. I'm going to try to get it right. Is it Ndamukong Suh,
Joe. Let it flow off your tongue.
That's close enough. You should have just said yes. That's close enough. No one would have been able to tell. I'm sure they're static with these podcasts. No one would have been able to tell. But update us on what he's been up to. The guy's a beast. You wrote about him this week. Anyone who didn't read the article, check out Wes Bunning in the scouting department and read why Sue is one of our top choices for Heisman this year. It's a great piece. But go ahead, Wes.
Yeah, Joe. Sue, to put it nicely, he had a really tough week. Only 5 tackles, 3 tackles for loss, and a sack against Baylor. So even when the guy has a slow day, he's still, you know, an absolute monster inside. 3 tackles for loss and a sack. However, if you got a chance to watch the Baylor tape and all the attention Baylor put on Sue inside, double, triple team in this guy, it opened up the door this week. And this is why I like Sue so much, the impact he has on an opposing offense. His partner in crime, defensive tackle Jared Crick, had 5 sacks on the day, consistently murdering the guard one-on-one. Yeah, so that's the kind of impact Sue has. Guy goes for 5 tackles, 3 tackles for loss and a sack, yet with all the attention all on him, his counterpart comes up with a 5-sack game. So a pretty impressive week for Sue, to say the least.
Yeah, and you got to give him some credit for that, too. His numbers look good from that game, but when everyone else around him is producing these great numbers, and one of the main reasons is because of him, you got to give him some of that credit, too. You got to give him love. It's like basketball with the assist. Yep. You got to get some credit. Look at Steve Nash. Look at John Stockton. You know, guys like that. They get no credit, but they deserve the love. They do just as much to set those plays up. Number 2 on the list. We just talked about his team earlier, but we did not talk about him. Running back Mark Ingram, Alabama. He was on the bye, but talk a little bit more about Ingram, Wes.
Yeah, Ingram, this is a big week for him. Nationally televised game. He's going to be in the limelight. We're going to see him against a very talented LSU defense. The key for him is to keep the 100 yards coming in the SEC. If he can produce over 100 yards a game, keep the average up over 4.0, get a touchdown here or there, considering the defense he's gone against, that puts a lot of weight on the production that he has. So 100 yards, 4.0 a carry and a touchdown, that'd be a successful week for Ingram in the SEC versus LSU.
Do you still see Ingram as the top running back prospect in the nation right now?
As a whole, yeah.
As a whole, yes. So we'll go with that. All right. Number 3, another running back prospect, Fresno State. Tell us about him, Wes.
Yeah, Joe, I absolutely love this guy, and he was –
you got to give us his name first. I was setting you up for the big delivery on the name.
Crap, Joe. We got Ryan Matthews, man. I'm just glaring at the notes. Ryan Matthews was absolutely able to pummel Utah State this past week. 25 carries, 185, 2 touchdowns, putting his numbers at 13-16, 7.4 carry, and 11 touchdowns. Joe, sure. I'm highlighting him this week in our Saturday primer. Tonight he's going to play Idaho. Sure, Fresno State, Idaho, not the most intriguing of games, but you got a chance to check out Ryan Matthews. Plus, Idaho has one of the top offensive line prospects in the entire nation. Check out the reading. Check out the game tonight. It should be a good run. Surprisingly, some talented prospects on both teams.
Yeah, no thanks. I got better things to do than watch Fresno State, Idaho. But you know what? If it's on TV wherever I end up, I'm sure I'll probably be watching.
The Vandals, baby. The Vandals.
Vandals. Get out of here with that. I'm not watching that game. Number 4 on the list, another running back out of Pitt, the state we live in. Deion Lewis, what's good with Deion?
Yeah, the guy gets absolutely no love, Joe. Replacing Shady McCoy as a freshman this year. 5'8", 195 pounds. And all he's been able to do is be one of, if not the top player in the Big East this season. 1,029 yards, 5.6 a carry, 11 touchdowns. And he's on pace as a freshman, Joe, to go for 1,544 and 17 touchdowns, rushing against some talented Big East defenses this year. If this guy's not a freshman, he's right up in the running to be the Heisman Trophy winner. So, you know, they're taken away from him a bit because he's a true freshman. And we saw what they did. We finally opened up with Tebow as a sophomore a couple years ago. But this guy deserves a lot of love, a really talented running back.
I like it because I don't watch a lot of Pitt, to be quite honest with you, but you brought this name to my attention a few weeks ago, and now, you know, it's kind of like one of those things I'm following. Deion Lewis, everyone start watching him as well. The kid can play. I saw him. I have watched a little bit of Pitt since you told me about it. Not much, I'm not going to lie, but he does look he does look good when he plays. Number five.
I know you've been watching this guy, though, Joe.
That, you know what? This guy I do watch every week for reasons we're not going to get into. But I do watch this next player pretty much every single week, whether I'm watching it on the ESPN game tracker or if somehow he ends up on TV. But Case Keenum, quarterback from Houston. I'm not going to get into his numbers from last week, Wes. Why don't you tell everyone what he did?
Yeah, he puts up numbers like you put up in NCAA football, Joe, against Southern Miss. A 50-43 shootout last week. They don't play defense. Houston doesn't play defense. They pretty much ask Keenum to win it every game. The guy goes for 559 yards last week throwing, completes 81% of his passes and 5 touchdowns. Right there alone, I did the article with Sue this week all about the stats, and I'm not really a stat guy, but right there alone and the pace that he's on right now to throw for nearly 5,000 yards this year, you got to at least give him a mention. You got to at least get him to New York for a chance to win the Heisman. His stats are simply too good.
His numbers in the first half of that game, he had like, I think he was just shy of 300 yards and 3 touchdowns, but he was completing over 70% of his passes. The guy is just, it's like you said, they don't play defense. It's just, they're just going to throw. And if you can outsling them, good for you. If you can't, so be it. You're going to lose the game. Side note, you mentioned NCAA football, the video game. I recently tried to play with Keenum in Houston. Clearly, the guys who made the game didn't get the memo that this was a high-powered offense. I got my ass whipped. I was playing Oklahoma. I wanted to test the level of competition, and they were just too good. They were too fast for me, and no one on Houston could do anything to help me out. So clearly, the offense was like a B-minus. So, you know,
that's Bush League, Joe. Bush
yeah,
League.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I wasted my time playing because I figure, you know, I'm going to choose this guy's team for the shootout, and then when it's not a shootout, you know, I might as well have chosen Idaho or something like that. I mean, come on now. We were just talking about them, but all right. Bunning, what do you see this week? Highlight one player everyone should watch from this group. If someone's going to watch one player this week, whether it's a guy they've mentioned or a guy they haven't, give me one guy out there that people should be tuning into, or if they can't see him on TV, they should at least check out the stat line after the game.
All right, check out Patrick Peterson from LSU. He's going to be the guy responsible for guarding Julio Jones all game today. The guy's a 6'1", 210-pound corner, and I think LSU is ignorant and arrogant enough to let him out one-on-one in man coverage. The guy's a really talented player. He's physical at the line, can turn and run. I wrote earlier in the year when I first saw him play, there's a couple guys, Joe, that right away you're saying the guy's a first-round pick. This guy is a first-round pick. He's a true sophomore, and those two sophomores going against each other, two physically gifted athletes. You have to watch that matchup. You have to watch Peterson and Jones today.
That's good. You know, I throw that out there, try to catch you off guard. Not only do you give us a great name that we haven't talked about today, but in addition, it's for a game we can all watch this afternoon. So Joe, everyone can tune in. Wes, excellent.
I'm high level. You know that. I'm high level.
High level, my butt. But all right. Well, listen, Bunning, once again, an outstanding performance on your behalf. I'm sorry I rambled so much and took away from such quality content that you provide. But you know what? You did an excellent job, my friend. And thanks again for coming on. Enjoy that football today.
Oh, thanks a lot, man. I didn't get any sweatpants reference today. I'm a little surprised, but, you know, life is good. So.
I'm going to hold back. I'm going to let you enjoy yourself. I was impressed with your performance today, so I'm not going to rip you so much. I'm going to let you slide.
Nice. All right. Go Raiders tomorrow.
Oh, jeez. You had to go and do it. Get out of here with that.
Joe, it's our a def. Joe, we can't lose tomorrow. We're on the bye week. We can't lose, you know.
You know what? Somehow you will find a way to lose. Some news will come out of Northern California, and you will be losers by the end of the day. That much I can assure you. But that's all the time we have here today. Everyone, thank you for tuning in. Turn off this podcast immediately and go watch some football. For Wes Bunning, I'm Joe Fortenball. We will see you next time.
Brother Bellis in the back, sweet singers in the front, cruising down the freeway in the hot, hot sun. Suddenly, red blue lights flash us from behind. Loud voice booming, please step out onto the line. Bellet Bridgeway's a comfort, Cena just hides her eyes. Policeman taps the shades, is that a Chevy 69? How bizarre.